Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan.
I'm Hillary.
And I'm Kelso.
Later on in this episode, you'll be hearing a special interview I did with Virginia McGregor about her new young adult novel, As Far as the Stars. But before we get to that, let's talk about our current reads and books we're excited about. Who wants to start?
Okay, so I'm currently reading three books. I actually just got finished with one called The Dinner List by Rebecca Searle. And the plot of the book is, has anyone ever told you about the five people that you would want to have dinner with, living or dead?
Yeah.
So this book is based around that idea. So Sabrina, the main character, arrives at her 30th birthday dinner put on by her best friend. So her best friend is there as well as herself, but there's also three significant people from her past. Her ex, Tobias, one of her art teachers is there that she's had a very professional relationship with, and Audrey Hepburn.
Nice!
So the book is revolving around this entire dinner, and it kind of becomes clear as soon as the conversations start up that there's a reason that these people have been gathered together. It's an unexpected take on what it's like to have a first love, the road to finding your own happiness. It's very much a very nice, warm, kind of summery book to read.
It's a good beach read.
Yes, I definitely recommend it for a beach read.
Awesome.
The second book I'm reading is called The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss.
Yes.
I was recommended this book by a couple of our fellow...
Elizabeth especially.
Yes.
She's been telling me to read this book for 7 years.
Yeah, so no less than three booksellers have told me that I have to pick up this book. The book is about this man named Covethi, who is also a king killer, allegedly, and it is about his life from when he became an orphan in a crime-riddled city all the way into his successful bid to enter a legendary school of magic and become one of the most powerful wizards of all time. And it is part of a trilogy, and I started reading it, and then right after I started reading it and enjoyed it, realized that only two out of the three books are written and are out now, much to the chagrin of myself. Right.
Yeah.
So, it's super fun. It's high fantasy. Highly recommend this book. Which leads me to the third book, which is most likely going to be my favorite book that I've read this entire year, hands down. This one is called On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vaughn. This book is about a narrator. His name is Little Dog, who is now in his late 20s. He crafts a letter to his illiterate Vietnamese refugee mother, and it details a family history rooted in trauma, healing, and forgiveness. I listened to this book on Libro FM, and I highly, highly recommend listening to the book. It is read by the author. He is a performance poet, and you can definitely hear that in the cadence, in the rhythm of him reading his own story. The prose is amazing in this book. The book is fairly short. It's only about 236, 237 pages, but it reads like just this big, grandiose novel. This prose is going to keep punching you in the gut over and over again. I kept crying every single time when I was listening to it in the car ride on the way home, which I do not suggest you do.
Just sobbing while driving.
The prose is fantastic. I can't get enough of it. I do want to at least read a section of the book here just to give you a taste. This is a portion of the book where he is hanging out with his lover. His name is Trevor. "Hey," Trevor said, half asleep. "What were you before you met me?" "I think I was drowning." A pause. "And what are you now?" he whispered, sinking. I thought for a second. "Water." The whole book is like that. So, Ryan, what are you reading now?
All right, so I'm reading a couple things. So I am currently reading Contagion by Aaron Bowman, which is a sci-fi thriller set in space. There's like shades of Alien there. That's kind of the vibe. And that's kind of all I'm going to say for now, because our next episode I'll actually be chatting with Aaron Bowman.
Very cool.
She'll be here for the sequel with AC Goggin. They're doing a joint event, so we'll be chatting with them next month. But yeah, so I'm reading that right now, and I am loving it. And then I just finished a book on Libra FM. It's called We Set the Dark on Fire by Taylor K. Mejia.
Oh, that sounds so good.
Oh, it's such a good book. So it's set in a Latinx society where every man has two wives. He has a primera and a segunda. And young women are sent to school to be trained as either a primera or a segunda. Mm-hmm. And sort of like the primera is kind of like the main wife. She sort of runs the household, things like that. The segunda is the sort of like pretty wife who bears the children.
Okay.
this book is has shades of Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
All over it. It's fascinating because the main character, she is, like, top of her class in school. She's about to graduate as a primera.
Mm-hmm.
She has a secretive past because she came from, like, poverty, like, over the line.
Okay.
You know, like,
yeah.
Beyond the border. And no one knows that. And if they knew that, she would be, like, exiled.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, she's graduating as a primera to go to this very wealthy family, and she's going to rise through the ranks and be very successful and powerful and wealthy. And on the eve of her graduation, she is approached by rebel spies, essentially, and she is recruited as a spy.
Wow.
So she goes off to this family where she's supposed to just sort of be living this kind of cushy, not necessarily cushy because she, again, Handmaid's Tale-esque, so it wouldn't be the happiest lifestyle, but, you know, she's supposed to be a society woman.
Mm-hmm.
And instead she becomes a rebel spy, and they're is a subplot with LGBTQ characters.
Yes.
And so you've got people of color, you've got LGBTQ plus characters, you've got rebellion and this, you know, kind of really high society potentially crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just got like all of these really awesome different pieces that work really, really well together in this young adult novel. I loved it. Like I said, I listened to the audiobook of it, and I loved the narrator, and I highly, highly recommend it. It was awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Hillary, what are you reading?
I'm going to try to go fast because I've got more than two.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one I'm going to talk about is, I have not read this, but this was sent to me by St. Martin's publicist. She asked if we might be interested in it for a book club. It's currently out. It's called I Love You, But I Hate Your Politics by Jean Safer, PhD. The subtitle is How to Protect Your Intimate Relationships in a Poisonous Partisan World.
Hmm.
And Jean Safer is a psychiatrist who is liberal, who's married to a conservative Republican. Mm-hmm. And it's not a very big book. It's kind of a small book, but it's basically just about how do you deal with really strong political feelings with close friends and loved ones, and without breaking up your marriage or unfriending people. So I have no idea how good this book is, but if it's any good, it's really a necessary book for our times. So I'm looking forward to reading that. Another one that is coming out next week is called The Gone Dead by Chanel Benz. And this is a remarkable book. It's about a biracial woman whose mother was white, whose father was black. She was born in the early 60s, maybe the very late 50s. Her father was a well-known black poet, and her mother met him during civil rights marches. And they have this child, and they try to move back to Mississippi. And, of course, they're not allowed to be there together with this child. And so the daughter is raised by her mother but comes back to visit her dad. And she's there as a four-year-old and is a witness to her father's murder. And many years later, when she's in her 30s, she inherits the little shack that he was living in when this happened. And so she goes back and tries to find out what happened. And she does find out
Wow.
what happened. And it's a very convoluted, difficult story about Jim Crow and the way people became very emotionally involved, but were separated by race. And it's lovely and heartbreaking and very deftly told. She's a beautiful writer. I highly recommend it. And I love the audiobook of it. It was narrated by Bonnie Turpin, who did a great job, but I bet it's a really good read as well. And then I'm just going to talk about three of my latest staff picks. Actually, Recursion, I haven't made a staff pick yet, but I will. This is also on the bestseller list right now.
It's so good.
It is so good. There are a lot of these books about memory right now.
Mm-hmm.
Blake Crouch is the author of Dark Matter, which was another really wonderful sort of sci-fi parallel universe kind of book. This book is sort of almost a police procedural, noirish kind of thing. But it begins with a cop in New York City who's trying to figure out what is going on with this thing called false memory syndrome. People are turning up who are remembering other lives that are not the lives that they're living right now. Mm. And they're committing suicide or doing other bad things. And they're trying to get to the bottom of what is happening. And basically what it turns out is that there was... and you find this out very quickly. I'm not really giving anything away. There's a woman who was doing Alzheimer's research, who was trying to help people retain their memories.
Yeah.
And she came up with a contraption that basically can change the past by changing memory. And as you can imagine, that's a kind of a big weapon.
Yeah.
That the countries can use against one another and people can use against one another.
Wow.
And it just takes you down this rabbit hole. And Recursion, he's talking about looking in a mirror with a mirror behind it, and you see a thousand million, an infinite array of the same thing. It is really clever and is quite tragic in places and has a really satisfying ending.
Mm-hmm.
So, I loved it. I read it and I listened to it on Libro FM. Really good Libro FM recording.
Mm-hmm. I'm listening to it on Libro FM now and it's bananas. It's so good.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's so good.
Oh man, I'll have to listen to that one.
The next one is this book called Moneyland. It's written by a man named Oliver Bulow, who's British, and I heard him on a podcast, and so I went and sought out the book. The subtitle is The Inside Story of the Crooks and Kleptocrats Who Rule the World.
Hmm.
He's a journalist who does a deep dive into how the rich hide their money.
Mm.
And I will just read you quickly my little write-up that I did for my staff pick. If you, like me, spend a lot of time wondering how the heck a bunch of corrupt, greedy, unethical, mendacious thugs seem to have taken over the entire planet, then Oliver Bulow's Moneyland is the book for you. Here you'll learn how financial institutions both offshore and in the heart of New York City and London make massive corruption possible, resulting in an unprecedented transfer of wealth. Today, the top 1% of the world's population own one half of the world's wealth. This is causing misery, political instability, the rise of fascism and nationalism. This is a big, huge problem. And if you want to understand it, pick up Moneyland. Excellent book. And The Economist voted it the book of the year in England when it came out.
Wow.
And then finally, I want to talk about another bestseller written by Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love. This book, City of Girls, her new book, is just delightful. This is the perfect summer book, especially if you're a woman, and not a prude, because it has a ton of sex in it.
Like, oh yeah.
Like, just
yep.
Abandoned, I love it, I'm gonna have it, sex.
Amazing.
So here's my little write-up. It's delightful, hilarious, hard to put down, sometimes raunchy, and always big hearty. And hallelujah, it is unapologetically feminist. A memoir in a letter written in 2010 by 89-year-old Vivian Morris, the tale begins in 1940 when young Vivian has been kicked out of Vassar and sent to New York City to live with her Aunt Peg, the owner of a rundown Times Square theater called The Lily. Vivian jumps into the wild world of her new theater friends with both feet, discovering not only a love of sex and glamorous nightclubs, but also her talent as a costume designer. But when Vivian makes a big mistake, the kind that Walter Winchell likes to run in his gossip column, it looks like her life will be ruined. Instead, with a lot of help from her friends, Vivian picks herself up, heads full steam into the rest of the 20th century, and a remarkable second act. Wow. This is just a lovely, big-hearted book about being a good person, as well as being yourself with no apologies. It also takes place in a lot of it in Hell's Kitchen, where I lived for many years. I used to live on 49th Street, and a lot of this takes place on 49th Street, so it's very nice. Exciting.
That's fun.
So, yeah, if you want a frothy but actually kind of serious book at its heart, City of Girls by Elizabeth Gilbert.
That's awesome. It's got a gorgeous cover, too.
Yeah. Yes, it's got pink feathers, showgirl feathers. There are a lot of showgirls in this book, and they are hilarious.
Amazing.
So that's me.
Awesome. So recently, Gibson's Bookstore hosted an event with author Virginia McGregor, and she was kind enough to sit down with me afterwards and have a little chat. Virginia McGregor is the author of several novels, including What Milo Saw, Wishbones, and Before I Was Yours. Her latest novel for young adults is called As Far as the Stars and is on our shelves now. Here is my interview with Virginia McGregor. Hi, Virginia.
Hi.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
Excellent. So your latest young adult novel is called As Far as the Stars and is about two teenagers whose lives are thrown together in the wake of a plane crash and embark on a road trip together, discovering things about each other and their own lives along the way. This story is incredibly bittersweet. I love the dichotomy of two strangers becoming friends and falling for one another and sharing the fear that they each may have lost a person they love dearly in a horrible tragedy. Where did you get the idea for As Far as the Stars? Where did that come from?
So I suppose there are always several strands that come together when you're inspired to write a story. And because I write contemporary fiction, often the plot of a story comes to me through maybe a news report, something that I hear or I read in a newspaper. And a while back, I remember following the disappearance of the Indonesian airliner. And everything about it really fascinated me, you know, how the notion of flying, which always seems quite magical, how all those people can just disappear out of thin air, how you can have investigators, you know, scouring the flight path but never quite finding it. And I wasn't sure how I was going to use it, but it kind of stuck in the back of my head and I thought, you know, one day I will find the right story for it. And I've always also wanted to write a love story and a story of first love between teenagers because I think it's such a magical time when, you know, you start defining yourself independently of your parents and you form friendships and then deeper relationships of love with people who you actually have no tie to or blood relation to, and you're choosing your person, I guess. And so I wanted to write a love story too, but I wanted to make it quite original and put it in an interesting scenario and have these two characters meet as strangers. And I've always loved airports. I've been in airports lots. I was raised in France and Germany and Switzerland, and now I'm in America. And I find that you come together with people and strangers in a really interesting way in airports, and similar, you know, when you're traveling. So I suppose it's all those different elements, you know, the disappearance of the airliner, the falling in love, the first love, and then how strangers can meet and become so important to each other. So all of that came together.
So well.
Thank you.
So you are fantastic with names, both in your novels and in real life. The main character in this novel is Ariadne.
Yes.
Air, for short, which I found so fitting for her character. Here's this girl who loves the sky and space more than anything else. What is your process for choosing a name?
Well, I've been an English teacher for 10 years. I now write full time, but one of the joys and pitfalls of being a teacher is that you, over your lifetime, teach hundreds of thousands of children or come across hundreds of thousands of children. So when my husband and I, he's a theatre director and a writer too, and, you know, when we came to naming our children, it was really tricky because every name has an association with, you know, Sarah who sat on the front row and never did her homework or whatever it was. So naming our children was, you know, we knew we would have quite original out there names that didn't have associations. And I suppose I choose my characters' names like I chose my children's names. So trying to find names that I feel have a really interesting and strong resonance for the reader and are original. And, you know, we choose names that are very meaningful to us and to our stories as a couple and as parents. And then the names I choose for my characters, I like them to echo what's happening in the novel and the ideas in the novel, and also the characters. So Air is, you know, a really determined young lady who wants to study astronomy and she wants to be an astronaut one day, and so she's interested in the stars and air and the universe and so on. So it felt right. But also I did actually teach an Ariadne whose her abbreviation, her nickname was Air, and I just thought that was just such a cool name, and I borrowed that away and I knew I was going to use it sometime. And I used Christopher for the boy because he is much more conventional, traditional. He's going to, you know, goes to an all boys boarding school in England. And every name has such, to me anyway, such a resonance. And also looking through baby name books is so much fun. And looking at what you, you know, and you can't have hundreds of children, but you can write lots of characters. So every character is an opportunity to try out a name. And then actually writing more in America now, I'm trying to get my head around the names that are more current in America versus England, or even particularly in New Hampshire. So that's interesting.
That's so much fun. So as you mentioned, Air wants to be an astronaut, and she often talks about how she'll have to work twice as hard as a woman in science. And I know that you like to include social issues and themes into your novels. Can you talk more about that?
So my books, my contemporary novels, all have like one main contemporary issue in them, but then I try to just weave other issues in more subtly into the sub themes, I suppose, because I want my books to be a reflection of the times in which we live, almost like a snapshot. So if someone were to say, right, this book was published in, you know, 2019, what was happening in the world now? And that they would see that it's still a struggle for women in science, but also that women in science are making the most extraordinary moves forward. You know, women in science, along with, very graciously, she's always emphasizing it was the whole team, but has just devised an algorithm to create an image of a black hole, and that was all over the newspapers not long ago. I have two daughters, I now have a son, but for a while my life was very female dominated, and so I wanted to explore the notion of, you know, what women can do. And also, interestingly, I went to an all-girls school, I taught at an all-girls school, I also have taught in co-ed schools, and there's a really different phenomenon in each. So in all girls' schools, girls think they can do anything. So they do science as well as the arts. You know, when we put on a play, you can be Hamlet. There are no boundaries because it's not like boys do this and girls do that. We do everything. Whereas if you go to a co-ed school, very often everything gets segregated. So it's the girls who are doing English literature and who are doing art, and it's the boys who fill up the physics classrooms, because there's still this ongoing, I don't know, pressure for boys to fulfill certain societal norms and girls to fulfill certain societal norms. So I wanted to have a character who kind of broke through that and who showed that, yes, it takes a lot more work, but that you can do it. And I hope that reflects the times in which we live a little bit.
Yes, definitely. So your other main character, Christopher, is incredibly talented at origami and paper folding. He can make anything out of folding paper. And that struck me, it's one of those art forms that is amazingly creative because you have to be able to predict the folds that have to happen in order to form the tiny sculpture out of a flat piece of paper, which is something that my brain cannot comprehend. But it's also something that allows for a great deal of control in those kind of rigid folds, the tight folds and creases. And then there's also a level of repetition and relaxation that goes along with the folding as well. What kind of drew you to his paper folding? Is it something you can do, something you wish you could do?
It's really interesting. I remember once reading, there's an author who has now passed away. She was Canadian, called Carol Shields, who I came across a while back. And she wrote a book about writing, and she said, give your characters a job. And she, by that she meant, you know, not just like what your day job is, and certainly for teenagers they won't have that, but, you know, an occupation, a hobby, something that somehow acts as a metaphor for them as a character. And I found this like a really helpful device in a way, just like as ambition is to be an astronaut and to, you know, get into MIT and to be recruited by NASA, and a lot of that tells you about what she's like as a character. It acts as a sort of mirror of her character. And for Christopher, you know, that notion of, you know, he finds scrap bits of paper. He doesn't even have kind of sophisticated paper. He folds flyers and old airplane tickets and posters and things and napkins. And so there's that notion he's just using what's around him. And also the repetition, you know, his life sometimes, you know, can be very boring because he spends hours and hours and hours of his time at the airport, you know, waiting for his dad, you know, for reasons that you'll find out if you read the book. And he's also a very humble character. He doesn't believe that what he does is art. His father dismisses it. And that's another contemporary theme that I wanted to raise, is that I think a lot of young people these days, you know, they want to live artistic lives. They want to be writers or dancers or actors. And it's hard, you know, it's hard because there's no job security. And, you know, to even enter the industry is difficult. And so he doesn't value what he does. He doesn't see it as being significant. And yet what he does is absolutely beautiful. And as you will find out from the end of the novel, you know, he actually goes places with it. But I loved how this, as you said, the repetitious folding, but also the artistry, but also the humble nature of it, that it was, you know, an art form that he can do anywhere. And he can just grab a bit of scrap paper from any location and create something beautiful. That was a metaphor in itself to me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I definitely found him kind of in a time of distress, folding kind of brought him some control over the situation and kind of helped ground him in a way.
Yeah, and that's something interesting to do with the grieving process, which is a theme as well, is that when you're, you know, when you're going through real troubles in your life, sometimes having, you know, having something like that can just help you get through and give you comfort. And I know many people lose themselves in their work or return to, you know, some people, I guess they go and run marathons and they lose themselves in that running process, or some people lose themselves in, you know, in different elements. But for him, it was that. And that opening vision of a young boy sitting in an airport folding a piece of paper and how that drew air to him was important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've touched on this a little bit, but family is a huge part of this book. It's a huge theme in this book. Did you intentionally set out to write a book about family, or was it something that you kind of discovered as you delved into the characters' backstories?
So this is, you know, some people say every book is autobiographical. I often try to write away from myself, because I think if you write too close to yourself, sometimes, certainly for me, I worry that it's actually not going to be that interesting for the reader. And also I loved having an education in a book and learning about things that are other from my life. But this was quite personal. So I, you know, we were hoping and planning to have a third child, and thinking about the difference between having two children, which seems remotely sane at times, sometimes, to three, which suddenly, you know, they outnumber you, it becomes a big group. And I've always been fascinated by families of three, and especially moving to the US and having just, you know, our very small nuclear family here, it was, you know, we wanted to have another child. And when we were thinking of it, and I was thinking of it, I was reading quite a lot on about birth order, and another novelist, Anne Tyler, said that birth order is one of the things she finds most fascinating in the characters she writes about, because she writes about family a lot. And I wanted to explore that through these three characters. You know, how do you relate to your, you know, your older sibling or your middle sibling? What's it like to be a middle child? What's it like to be the firstborn? What's it been like to be the lastborn? You know, how can you, how do those families sometimes go against, you know, the expectations of birth order? But also I just wanted to you know, to show the dynamics of a family that experiences a tragedy and a grief, and how the dynamics in that family shift slightly, and also how each member relates to the other. So, you know, in this story, Air is very close to her older brother Blake, who's the one who goes missing, and the other sibling, the older one who's getting married, feels slightly left out. But as Blake has gone missing, the relationship between Air and Jude, her older sister, shifts. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to explore that as well. I think family is always just a wonderful resource to use in writing to explore character. And
absolutely. So you've been living in the US for a little bit now. How important were the specific US locations in this book, and how important was it to you to have UK connections in your characters' lives?
So maybe it was a bit cowardly of me to have an English element in this book. My next book is set exclusively in the US, although it does still have an English character. So I'm I sort of wanted to show my own experience of making the transition from England to America by you know, having an English character suddenly going on this very iconic American road trip with an American girl. And researching the book, and particularly the journey from Washington to Nashville, helped me to get to know America a little bit better, and a bit of America that, you know, that is quite far from where I am, which is in New Hampshire. And also Nashville, Tennessee has an important connotation for me personally, because my daughter is called Tennessee, and one of the main characters in this story is a musician, and so, you know, it's an incredibly important place. I think it's almost like a mecca for musicians, isn't it? So, you know, I was nervous writing about America because I wanted to get it right, and I wanted to get the places right and the terminology right and the atmosphere right, and I also wanted to explore this new country that I now belong to.
I loved it. Lita, the little dog in the story, is so precious and is essentially the third main character because of how much she brings to the story. And I do know that you like to include animals in your stories. How important are animals to you? Do you have a favorite animal?
I had two cats, and sadly one passed away when I moved to America, and we still have one who is just such an original little boy who acts like a dog. He goes on hikes with us, and the girls love him. I just, I love animals. I feel like they have a spiritual dimension to them. I feel like they are superior to us in some ways. Sometimes I wonder if animals were ruling the planet, life would be a bit better. I'm a vegetarian as well. You know, I find it inconceivable to eat my friends. and that's, you know, that's a personal thing. And I feel like including animals in my fiction, especially as they relate to young people or children, is a way to sometimes offer a different dimension to the books, and sometimes in books that are quite sad, offer a bit of light relief to give a different angle. And I think sometimes the way you watch a child relate to an animal, or a young person relate to an animal, tells you a lot about them. My husband's a real animal lover, and I think that's part of what made me fall in love with him, watching how he relates to animals. Interestingly, I kind of seem to almost unconsciously now weave them in. And this little dog is a scrappy little thing, and poignantly belongs to Air's older brother, who's gone missing on the plane, Blake. Then Christopher forms quite a nice relationship with the dog as well. And so I did. Yes, I mean, I've grown up with cats, so they've always been very close to me. But I would say I'm not an exclusively a cat person. You know, I love all animals. The only animal I struggle with is snakes, but I try really hard not to demonize them. And especially with my daughters, there are more snakes in America than England, so I come across them quite frequently, and I try really hard not to go phobic. And the other day my daughter said, "Oh, I think I love snakes, mommy," and I said, "Yes, you know, I haven't turned her against, you know, because, you know, they're harmless enough." Maybe I should put a snake in one of my books.
Wonderful. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on today?
Just a big thank you, and a big shout out for Gibson's, which is just the heart of this community, and the booksellers are magical, and it's just such a wonderful, wonderful place for authors and for local authors. So very grateful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for chatting with me today. As Far as the Stars is available now, so come get a copy of that lovely book.
Okay, we've got a ton of events coming up. Tomorrow, June 26th at 6 p.m., we've got Merrick Bennett presenting The Civil War Diary of Freeman Colby, Volume 2, 1863. Then on Friday, June 28th at 6 p.m., photographer Jay Philbrick will be visiting us to share the 150th anniversary celebration book for the Mount Washington Cog Railway. In July, all month long, we'll be participating in a citywide Where's Waldo hunt for local kiddos. Stop in at any point in July to grab a Waldo passport and then find Waldo in as many local businesses along Main Street as you can. Once you've got a completed passport, you can enter into a raffle and then join us at the end of the month for our Waldo party. On Monday, July 1st, Gibson's Book Club will be discussing My Ex-Life by Stephen McCauley at 5:30 p.m. And then the following Monday at 5:30, the Open Discussion Project will be discussing A World in Disarray, American Foreign Policy and the Crisis of the Old Order by Richard Haass. And as I mentioned earlier, YA authors Aaron Bowman and A.C. Goggin will be here on Sunday, July 14th at 3 p.m.
for a joint event and will be sitting down afterwards to chat with me for this podcast. So join us for their event and then listen to their interview here on The Laydown. That's just a few of our many, many events coming up. You can see all of them on our website, gibsonsbookstore.com. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. And we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books we talked about today. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks.
Bye!
Bye.